I'm Matt Gilhooly, and this is The Life Shift, candid conversations about the pivotal moments that change lives forever. Hello, my friends. This is The Life Shift podcast, and I am here with my friend Erica.
Hi, Matt.
Hi, Erica.
It's nice to talk to you.
We have known each other. I was trying to think of the year. I think it was 1998 that we really like started to connect because it was around the time of Greece.
Junior year, like, I feel like we knew each other junior year, but definitely like the beginning of senior.
Yeah, I think we must have met doing Greece in some capacity. So for those of you listening, back in high school, I was in the theater program for a little bit of it. And of course, like every school, we did a production of Grease, and pretty much the entire school was in it.
I think so. I just wanted to be anywhere I could sing and dance. It didn't really matter.
Yeah. And I wanted to be the opposite of that. I wanted to, when I auditioned for Grease, I auditioned for like tree number three in the back. But if any of you know, typically, well, back then, at least in high school, there were far fewer men or boys at the time auditioning for theater productions. Maybe society told them that they shouldn't, but there were far fewer men, boys, sorry, that were auditioning compared to females. So in the sense that we even had two female casts, we had like a cast A and a cast B, and then the guys were just the single cast. Like we were always in it, but then we would trade out the ladies. And but then we had, you know, like what, the dance team, we had the sign
That's
language
how I got in there,
team.
I think it was through the dance team. So funny. That was a fun experience.
Yeah, but we spent a lot of time our senior year hanging out, and when I kind of left the theater area space, and we hung out a lot then. And since then we've pretty much done a really good job of maintaining friendship and engaging with each other pretty regularly. I'm sure there was a period when social media wasn't as big, right?
Right.
We weren't as connected.
Well, I remember when I first signed up for Facebook, I think it was like new for anyone not in the college scene, right? Because I think before it was like just if you were in college. And so I signed on late. But yeah, you were one of the first ones I found through there. And obviously I found a lot of friends from high school and even middle school and stuff like that. But you're definitely one of the ones that I engage with the most, even off of social media. So yeah, it's been great to like watch you through the years and all the things that you've done and keep up with you that way.
Likewise. we also had a good time at our, well, we had partially a good time at our 10-year reunion.
You had a great time. What are you talking about?
We had a great time until there was a wall and then it wasn't as fun. But all that being said, we've had a really long friendship and I cherish that. And I'm so glad that you wanted to come on the Life Shift podcast and share your story. And we were talking before recording how I think what you're about to share with us and your journey and the things that you've learned through your journey and the growth that you have had will help a lot of people that might feel like they're alone in kind of what they're going through. So I appreciate you, one, just being willing to share your story.
Thanks for having this kind of platform, because like you said, it is kind of a lonely experience. And if you don't have an avenue to talk about it, you know, you can't do anything else but kind of like hold it in and keep it to yourself. So I'm excited to see what comes from this, if anyone relates to my story.
Well, we'll share some of your information in the show notes so people can kind of see what you're doing and where you are. And you have a little side thing that you do on social media too. So maybe we can share that and get people engaged in that. But so what I like to have people do is kind of just set the scene of kind of what life was like before that bigger shift that I know that you want to talk about, because you have multiple shifts in this particular part of your journey. But I think there's one that maybe change your life a lot more than some of the others. So before we get to that, maybe you can just kind of give us what life was like, what you were doing, what you were aiming for. And then we can kind of go from there.
Yeah. My husband and I got married in 2007. And, you know, right away we knew that we wanted a family, right? We didn't want it right immediate, but we knew that that was definitely in our future plan. So probably about a year into marriage, we said, all right, we're going to get off birth control. We're going to kind of just see what happens and kind of let nature take its course kind of thing. So I would say, like, we weren't really militant about our family planning, right? I wasn't tracking anything. I wasn't scheduling our time together. Like, I didn't want it to be a chore. I've heard like stories of people trying to plan their families and make it like, it was like a project, right? So that's what I didn't want. It was just kind of like, we'll just see what happens when it happens. We're leaving the timing up to God. When we get pregnant, we get pregnant. Well, fast forward, about 6 years went by and it kind of started hitting us like, all right, is something wrong? Because like, maybe we should be tracking or maybe we should be charting or scheduling, but we didn't want it to be like that. But I was kind of getting concerned. I'm getting older and, you know, men can have kids till they're by their graveside. But, you know, for a woman, it's like we kind of have like a little like window that just starts to get, you know, tighter and tighter. And so probably around that 5 to 6 year mark, we kind of figured, well, I don't know what's going on here, but, you know, we're not really finding ourselves. We had never had any close calls or false alarms. So, you know, we started off meeting with doctors, ended up with a fertility specialist and figured out what the problem was. And so we came up with our fertility plan, right? Which was to go through the IUI process. And it's a little less invasive, less complicated than IVF, which I'm sure a lot of people hear about. So we went through, we started the process with our fertility specialist, you know, which was kind of like a kickstart. I would say that was probably like a mini shift, right? Where, you know, my whole life, all I wanted to do was be a wife and a mom. You know, some people that I went to school with had great career aspirations. And, you know, I had some aspirations of what I wanted to do career-wise. But my big goal was like, I wanted to be a wife and I wanted to be a mom. So like I checked off the wife, you know, box, and now the mom box is still like blank. And so I started to feel like, man, like, what's wrong with me, right? It's a natural, I feel like, inclination for a woman to feel like it should be easy to get pregnant and it should be easy to be a mom. And
well, I think that's what society had fed us, especially our generation. There was no talk, or at least not public talk, about fertility doctors and assistants in ways that, you know, maybe biologically, we can't all do what the movies are telling us we can do.
Right. And so, yeah, very taboo. I didn't know anybody who had dealt with infertility issues. And so again, it was a very weird time where I had friends that were getting pregnant. My brother and his wife were starting their family. And, you know, it was just like all around me. And I was just like, what is going on? Like, why is this so complicated? I just want to have a baby. I just want to be a mom. So it was a very trying time for me, very like a little of a depression season where I just couldn't, you know, really get over this. Like, this is all I've wanted, right? And people, you know, work towards the things that they want. And, you know, why does this have to be so complicated for me? So it was a little hard, but went through the IUI process. We found out we were pregnant with our first child, Brooklyn, and she was born in 2015. So really great end result to like that trying season that we had. And, you know, I always knew I wanted to be a girl mom, right? And so I was super happy to finally have my girl. And, you know, anyone that knows me, I'm really into like all the girly things, right? The fashion, the beauty, like the dance, like I was just, you know, on cloud nine, but I knew that I didn't want her to be an only child. And so eventually, if we wanted to have more children, that whole fertility process would have to get started again. Because when I had her, I was 34. And, you know, again, that clock is ticking. And the doctors tell you like, oh, you're near 35, you know, that's kind of old to, you know, in
terms of... They have a terrible name for it too.
Yeah. It's just, it's like, I felt like looking back, I'm like, dang, I was still young. I was still fresh. Right. But not in the whole scheme of fertility. I was aging out.
isn't it called like a geriatric pregnancy or something really offensive?
Yeah. Yeah. You get told that your eggs are old or getting older, they're diminishing. And it's just like, all right, okay. And I knew like I was not in a good space to be a mom, like in my young 20s. So I actually felt like I was in a good season of life, right, to be a parent. So
you were prepared.
Yeah. More prepared, a little bit more stable. Right. In terms of
like, no one's ever prepared to be a parent.
No, right? No, no, definitely not. And it's never a perfect time, right? You're never going to have your finances all lined up perfectly or your house or your job situation. Like there's always gonna be something that maybe isn't right at the, you know, peak, but you know, again, my window's closing. So it's like, I got to get moving on this. So probably about the time that Brooklyn turned two, it was when my husband and I were like, all right, if we're going to do this again, like we have to get started on it. So again, went through the whole like fertility process. And now this time it didn't work as quickly as it did with Brooklyn, right? We did one cycle of IUI with Brooklyn and bam, I was pregnant. So tried it again for the second time and didn't happen so quickly. So one cycle gone, do it again. And then my fertility specialist is like, well, we might have to, you know, switch up medications and see if that helps. But just to give you a heads up, the other medication usually has a higher rate for multiples. But he's like, it won't really increase your chances because you already have multiples in your family. My maternal grandmother is a Siamese twin. She and her sister were connected at you know, birth. And so they're identical. So I knew I was like in the pipeline for multiples, but I just figured like, all right, well, it didn't happen the first time. So we'll, you know, it'll just be like a fluke.
And you wanted additional for Brooklyn.
Yeah. And at this point I was about 35 years old. And so I knew very strongly, I wanted her to have a sibling, right? I had one sibling growing up, my brother. My husband was one of six, so he had many siblings. But we just knew we didn't want her to be an only child. We wanted her to have someone to grow up with. And so that was important to us. And so, you know, in our mindset, it was like, we'll just do this for one more, right? We'll just have one more baby. And so we changed the fertility treatments. We went through the whole IUI process again. And so now we're nearing the appointment for the first ultrasound to basically see that everything worked through and that I was pregnant. And I kind of cheated. I took a pregnancy test at home. You're not supposed to do that. They want you to take like...
Hopefully they're not listening.
Yeah, hopefully not. But, you know, they want you to have the official blood test done in their lab, right? You know, because obviously the blood test is going to be more accurate than like an at-home pregnancy test. But I'm not good at waiting. So I took the at-home pregnancy test. Saw that
especially I was after the first cycle, not
exactly
going
exactly.
Right? Yeah.
So I took it, found I was pregnant, and I was like, okay, great. So now at this point, I'm just praying that the blood test matches up and like I am for real, you know, pregnant. So when the appointment came up, it was actually scheduled for a day that Ryan was leaving for a trip to go out of town with some men from our church. So I knew he wasn't going to be at this appointment. I knew I was going to do it solo, but I was like, whatever, I'll FaceTime you and, you know, whatever.
Right. Just a check mark.
Yeah,
right?
It's just a check mark. We're just getting like that confirmed result.
You already cheated.
Yeah, I already cheated. I already know that I'm pregnant, but, you know, this is the official one, so I want you to be present. So have the appointment and, you know, lying on the exam table, I've got Ryan on the phone and, you know, my fertility specialist, he was a jokester, always like, he just kept everything light and very like funny because it's a very serious, trying time, right? And it can get very heavy emotionally. Like there were many appointments that I was there and left crying and, you know, it is heavy. So he was very great at always keeping it light and, you know, very at ease. And so, you know, he gets the sonogram ultrasound ready. And so we're talking and, you know, he's asking about Ryan about the trip and then he gets quiet. And so I get a little nervous and then he's like, all right, well, things look good. And I'm like, okay. So like, I'm pregnant. And he goes, yep, you're definitely pregnant. So he's just talking and, you know, moving wand around and everything. He's like, all right, we've got two. And I said, I'm sorry, what? He's like, we've got two. And I was like, two what? Like, my brain didn't even go to twins. I was just like, okay, he's like, feet are, like, I don't know what he was talking about. He's like, we have twins. And I was like, I don't even know that I spoke. I felt like all the blood drain from my face. Ryan is screaming in the phone. Like, you know, he's elated. He's excited. And I'm just like, I felt like I went mute. Like, I didn't know like what to, I didn't know what to say. I was just like, what? Huh? And so he's like, yeah, you're pregnant with twins. I was just frozen. And I was like, are you sure? Like, I thought he was playing a joke on me. And he's like, nope, look. And he turned the screen over and he's like, there's two heartbeats. They're right here. They're next to each other. And I was just like, oh my God. Like, it was weird because in that moment, I was super excited. I was like pregnant, but also like super like in shock. Like, I didn't want to. I just wanted one more.
Let me ask, are you kind of a planner? Are you someone that is kind of regimented? You have like, this is what I'm doing next. Kind of, is that your
1000%?
So in your mind, it was like, our next check mark is to get pregnant with one more child and then we're done and we can carry on with the procedure of life.
Yeah.
So that's mm-hmm. probably why you're like, my plan.
Yeah. My plan went out the window and it was a really weird time because at that moment, in my work life, I had just been promoted shortly after Brooklyn was born. Promotion I worked really hard for, right? And so at that time, I felt like, man, I'm killing it. Like, I got the promotion I worked really hard for. I've got this perfect baby girl. We're working on, you know, giving her a sibling. So like, I'm killing it right now. And at that moment, I was like, this completely just throws everything out the window. I knew instantly this was a game changer. Everything about my life was going to be completely different. So ended that doctor appointment, said goodbye to Ryan, call you later. And I drove home from that doctor appointment, you know, alone and cried the entire drive. And I felt a little bit guilty because they weren't like tears of joy. I was really bummed out. I was bummed out because I knew everything about my life was going to be completely different. I knew it was going to change everything. It was going to change my work life, my home life. I just knew everything. I knew instantly that the house that we were living at the time, we were going to have to get rid of because it was too small. So it's just like, my mind was already flashing forward to everything that this was changing. And I wasn't happy about it. I was a little bummed.
You were bummed out. And I think it's interesting because so many people, and again, I'm going to age us, but so many people in our generation, it was almost like we were trained to dream and paint the picture of the future. Like, what are you going to do 50 years from now? And what's your life going to look like? So you probably had the picture. You had the two kids, beach vacations, yes. You know, the two parents, everyone around you. And now it's like, just kidding. Let me erase all that. And you're going to have to make a new one.
Yeah.
So I get it.
Yeah. I'm totally a planner by nature. I mean, I live and breathe by a schedule. Everything's on a schedule. There's a routine. Something gets thrown off. It throws me off. And, you know, probably one of the biggest things that drives my husband nuts because he's very much like, go with the flow. And like, it's not a big deal. And I'm like, everything's a big deal. Like, you know, so this was just like another one of those situations where he was like super excited. And I was kind of irritated that he was so excited. And I was just like,
do you think part of your idyllic like future of two children was based on your upbringing of having the two of you? And then Ryan's was, there were so many that it was just like more, you know, was, do you think was some of the split?
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, I always knew in my head, I think, again, this is where that planning mindset came. I always said I wanted three kids. I don't know why I said that. I was just like, three sounds like a cool number. Anything more than that, not interested. Two would be cool. I definitely didn't just want one. So maybe that totally played into it for sure. I think what also played into it is that I knew that this wasn't going to change Ryan as much as it was going to change me, right?
Right.
I'm the one that had to go through the fertility treatments. I'm the one that's going to have to go through the labor and delivery and the pregnancy. I'm the one that's going to have to change my job situation. I knew that even though, right, we're living in 2022, back then it was not, it's like moms and dads should carry the weight of the responsibility. But I think traditionally, right, it's the mom that bears the brunt of the home responsibility. And I knew that that was not, that was going to be the case. I would bear the brunt of the home responsibility, but I also have to bear the brunt of the work responsibility, right? We weren't in a place where I could just quit my job and, just be a stay-at-home mom. So I knew that it was primarily going to change me. And that, I think, is what I was upset about because I didn't plan for this change.
Right. Did you feel like resentment to the fact that Ryan was so happy and excited about it? Yeah.
Yes.
And that's hard to, and I think that's important for people listening now is like, that's okay to feel that way. And sometimes we put the shame on ourselves. Like you said, you drove home when so many people going through fertility treatments, finding out that they're having twins would be elated, right? Or like just so excited. It's working.
And I should have been so excited.
Well, no, you should have been however you were, because I think it's important to realize that we're humans, right? Like whatever other people are putting on us is on them, right? That's what they're projecting, some kind of like what we should be feeling. We can feel however we want. And so that's the reason I asked that question, because I think that even in some of the other stories that have come before yours, it's like, we need to own the fact that we're human and it's okay to feel however we feel at whatever moment in time. So like, I think it's awesome and brave of you to say out loud, and hopefully it helps you say it out loud, that you were bummed.
Yeah.
Like that, it just, that's okay.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to pause and jump in there and just say like, it's okay to be resentful of other people. Like it's okay to just be.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that. Because there was a lot of guilt on myself. Like I felt bad because I was like, Erica, you wanted to be a mom. Here you are, a mom, right? You wanted more than one child. You got more than one child.
Right.
You went through an infertility journey, right? You should be grateful and you should be thankful. And I was thankful and I was grateful, but I was a little irritated and I was a little irritated that like Ryan wasn't going to have to change anything. Right. Like it was really going to be me. So that was kind of annoying. So that was definitely like a shift moment where I was just kind of like, okay, well now I have to adapt. This is my new path. Right. So that was probably around the 6 to 8 week mark. So fast forward, we're now going through the regular, and I'm considered high risk because I'm older now and I'm carrying multiples. Yeah, I'm geriatric in terms of mom years and I'm carrying multiples. So I'm now considered a high risk pregnancy. And so in addition to seeing my OBGYN, I now have to see a perinatologist who specializes in high risk pregnancies. So we get to about the 12 week mark, I want to say, and so part of that high-risk pregnancy checkup process is like, checking to see if there's any screenings for any abnormalities, any defects, anything like that. So they do a blood test and send it off and they do scans. And one of the scans that they did was a nuchal translucency test, which basically kind of checks the back of the neck area where there's fluid. And based on the amount of fluid that they see can indicate if there's something, wrong or something that, you're not expecting. So baby A was Camden and baby B was Eden. And so as the weeks of the pregnancy were going by, they noticed that Eden was always a little bit smaller compared to Camden, right? But they didn't expect them to be huge because they're twins and, there's only one place for them to be. So, they're going to be a little compact. But they noticed in the nuchal translucency scan that Eden had a little bit more fluid in the back of her neck, which is typically a marker for Down syndrome. So they called me at work to give me the results of this scan, right? So I shuffle myself off into a conference room and I'm just expecting like, hey, cool, everything's fine. Like, carry on with your day. And so the doctor gets on the phone and I could tell in his voice something's not right, right? He's not like happy, right, chipper, you know, it's just, mm-hmm, hi, Mrs. Kelly, and got the results back and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he said, I'm sorry to say that it appears that there is a high risk of Eden having Down syndrome, right? So immediately another wave of emotions, right? Because now I'm just like, what? Like, something's wrong? Like, what's going on? And I'm at work. So I'm just trying to like bite my lips and try not to dissolve into tears. But he was just like, now we don't know for sure. We won't know for sure until we do another test. There were two tests that I think you could do to really confirm whether or not she had Down syndrome. One, I had already passed the week mark for, so that was out of the window. And the other one was an amniocentesis, which basically they would have to puncture the amniotic sac of the baby, extract the fluid, and then do the test. But because I'm pregnant with twins, they would have had to puncture both. And with that becomes an increased chance of miscarriage for either of the babies. So he said, that's basically your only option if you want a confirmed diagnosis. And then I said, well, what's my other option? He said, well, you just wait until the twins are born and then she'll have blood work done and the genetic testing will show. And so it left me very heavy because, again, going back to my nature of being a planner, right?
Yeah.
My gut instinct.
You'd already accepted that, yeah, you're having twins at this point.
Right. At this point, I'm like, all right, I've got two coming. All right. So now I've made new plans for the twins coming. And so my nature was like, yes, I would want to do the test. I would want to know upfront what I'm dealing with per se, right? I can learn more about it, learn what this might, you know, bring. What is labor and delivery going to look like? Just kind of brace myself mentally for anything that might be coming. But because there was an increased chance of miscarriage, I knew I couldn't. Because I'm like, sure, that'll give me an answer, but what if it affects her? What if it affects Camden? You know, like, so I kind of knew that I was stuck really with no choice. My choice was just to wait the full 9 months to get an answer. It's a high risk already. And he told me it's an increased chance of miscarriage. So he's like, I'm just letting you know what the options are. And that was it. So I hang up the phone. Again, I'm at work and I'm just like, overload of emotions and thoughts. I couldn't even focus the rest of the day. I went back to my desk, but it was useless. I was just like frozen. My mind is racing. I couldn't even think. Thankfully, that phone call was towards the end of the day, so I had like a couple more hours. But that drive home, I called Ryan and immediately just burst into tears and was just like a mess, right? And just processing that thought that something potentially could be wrong with her, right? We're not going to know for sure, but there's a high chance that she does have Down syndrome. And quite frankly, I didn't know a lot about Down syndrome. I knew what it was. I heard of it. I didn't know anybody in my personal life that had someone affected by it. So I didn't really have any like firsthand experience knowing much about it. But all I knew in my head was that here's a diagnosis of a special needs child. And this is not what I wanted. I didn't want twins and I didn't want a special needs child, right? I didn't feel like I was fit for that. I have a cousin who has a child with a special needs diagnosis and I've seen from afar what her life looks like. It's a lot of sacrifice, right? It's a lot of kind of dying to yourself, right? You, whatever plans and dreams you have for yourself kind of go on the back burner because you're caring for your child. I mean, it kind of goes the same for a typical child. You die to yourself, really. I mean, they kind of really dictate the rest of your days. So went home, picked up Brooklyn from my parents' house. And again, another episode of emotion because I now told my parents, I got the test results back. This is what it looks like. This is not what I wanted. you know, and I remember my dad saying something to me that, does it matter? She's your baby, right? I said, yeah, of course she's my baby. You're going to love her regardless, right? Of course I'm going to love her regardless. So then it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if she has it or not. You will be fine. She will be fine. And you'll figure it out. And like kind of irritated with my dad. He's always the voice of reason. But at that moment, I didn't want reason.
You didn't want reason.
I didn't want reason. But I knew he was right. It's my baby, right? Nothing's going to change that. So that to me was the beginning of like the biggest shift in my life thus far. I was now realizing that like I am potentially going to be a special needs parent. So now not only am I taking on twins, but now a child with a diagnosis.
Do you feel that, or do you recall when you kind of internalized and accepted those words that your dad said to you? Like, was there like a moment where you were like, you know what? He's right. Let's go. Like, new plans, we're getting going.
I think in my head, I knew he was right. But in my heart, I hadn't accepted it yet. It was, because I feel at that moment, it was a grieving process that I was now going through, right? Whatever plans and dreams and aspirations that I had created once I accepted that I was having twins changed, right?
Yeah.
We found out we were having twins. We then found out we were having a boy and a girl. And so like my mind is racing. Great. I tell Brooklyn, like, you're lucky you get to have a brother and a sister, and you're going to do all these fun things with your sister, and you're going to have a brother. And so like my mind is already like going with like dreams and plans, right, that I had for the three kiddos, but especially the twins, right? And I think at that moment, my mind shift like turned towards what she wasn't going to do. Right? So like,
yeah.
And I don't even know anything right at this point. Like, I don't know definitely if she has Down syndrome. I don't know what Down syndrome means for her life. All I heard was diagnosis. She's not typical. Something's wrong. And immediately my head just started filling with all these things that like she wasn't going to do. I mean, I'm pregnant and I'm already thinking like, is she going to live with me forever? Is she ever going to be independent? Will she ever get married? Like, my mind is fast forwarding years ahead of where we're at. But I think that's just when I started to grieve.
I think that's normal.
Yeah. I started to grieve the plans I had for her, because I just felt automatically like this is going to limit her. So I think for the next, well, really for the duration of the pregnancy, it was really hard emotionally. I came to accept, hey, she's probably going to have Down syndrome, right? Because as we continued with the special medical visits and stuff like that, you know, I just kept on, they're treating her as though she has it, right? So they're monitoring her heart more closely, because with Down syndrome, there's usually sometimes a heart issue, right? They're comparing and contrasting how she's growing compared to how her brother's growing. And so it was kind of always just in my face. So I had kind of started to just accept like, okay, she probably has it and that's it. And tried to do some research, but I had to play it careful because I didn't want my mind to spiral out of control with all these what ifs, but I kind of wanted to be prepared a little bit and have an understanding of what I might be dealing with when she was born. So the pregnancy was rough emotionally, right? I had a 3-year-old that I was tending to. I had a full-time job. I had a husband, family, and friends, and, you know, just trying to be excited about this season of my life. But internally, I was grieving, and I was a little heartbroken, and I was sad. I was a little depressed.
Yeah. Were you not sharing that?
With my immediate family, yes, and a few close friends, but I didn't know anybody else really that had a special needs child. My one cousin at the time, she's now living locally, but she was out of state, right? Her husband was in the military, so she wasn't close by. And I didn't know anybody else with a special needs child. So it was just something that I was really processing internally alone.
In episode 5, I talked to a former student of mine, actually, who went through a fertility journey. And she was very much like what you say, like a very much a planner. And like, life is not falling into these calendar boxes that I've created for myself. And her biggest thing was like, I was going through it alone, even though everyone around me was like celebrating and things were changing, and I was stuck inside here. And I don't want to preach about it, but I think that if anyone's listening, if you can find support groups, and even if it's not anyone that you know, like just someone to be like, because imagine when you were spiraling or you were thinking about the next thing, if you had someone that you didn't know, but had similar, had gone through something similar or had a special needs child that was 12 when you were worried about whatever was happening at 12, you know, like you could say, hey, I'm really worried about this. And they could be like, well, here's my experience. And something like that.
Yeah.
Maybe could help. You know, I just feel like we often as humans try to pretend that everything's okay when inside we're like crumbling. And if nothing else, even if you're not going through the same thing that any of these people on this podcast go through, like just to know that like you don't have to do it alone. There are other people that have gone through similar things. We're not, as much as we like to think we're unique, a lot of people are going through a lot of the same things. So I'm sorry that you had to go through that alone, though.
Yeah. And it was, I think it was self-inflicted, right? I had my family who was super excited, super elated, super encouraging, right? Very supportive, always telling us like, she's going to be fine. She has it. She doesn't have it. You're going to be fine if she has it. She doesn't have it. But I think it was hard for me to speak about how I was really feeling because I felt very hypocritical, right? Like I wanted babies so bad and now I got the babies. And here I am kind of upset that they didn't match my expectations, right? And so I felt very guilty about that. Like, why am I feeling so like upset about this, right? But on the flip side, like I'm super happy. I'm super happy to be pregnant again, give Brooklyn siblings. And how lucky am I that I get to have a boy and a girl, right? So I kind of felt like I was being a hypocrite. And so therefore, I didn't want to say it out loud because I felt like, you're complaining. You're complaining about like, you know, what God has blessed you with. And that was something that I struggled a lot, even on my own private time, in my own private time of prayer. Like I felt guilty. Like, God, I asked you to make me a mom and you made me a mom. And now I'm like ungrateful I'm complaining. Yeah. Or like, why? I asked that question a lot. Why?
Yeah. And I think you probably know now, but before we get to the why now, I think, you know, I think it's common to not, because everyone around you is like trying to be supportive, trying to help you out. Yeah. And the feeling you don't want, and when you're in those moments, you just want someone sometimes to just commiserate with you or to just listen and not tell me it's going to be okay. Maybe it will. And logically, you probably knew it was going to be fine.
Exactly. Because I know it's going to be okay, but I don't want to hear you tell me it's going to be okay. Yes. 1,000% yes. Like, you know how they say misery loves company? I wanted some company.
Yeah.
At that moment, I wanted some company.
And I think we need to curate those people in our lives too that don't always have to say something. Sometimes you're right. Misery loves company. I just want to complain. Let me complain. Let me do it. Yeah. I'll process it. Yeah. But I need to get it out. Right. Yes. And so maybe, you know, in your prayer moments, did that help, at least saying it out loud or at least thinking it, you know, in a purposeful way for you?
Yes. I had a lot of good cry fest in my own quiet time, you know, praying. Just, I would just sit sometimes in the car and just bawl my eyes out until I felt like I could take a deep breath and like, because like that part of my head knew it's going to be fine. Whatever's coming, like, we'll deal with it. It'll be fine, right? There's people in worse situations. That's what I kept on telling myself. I had a very good friend who was an emergency medicine physician, right? And so I talked to her a lot about this diagnosis, like, what does this mean? And she would tell me, Erica, of all the diagnoses, right, that you could come across, like, this one's not that bad, right? Even if she does have a heart problem, even if she does have a thyroid problem, like, she will still live a fulfilling life and she'll be able to do things. She might take longer to learn how to do them. She might need extra help to do them, but, like, this one's not that bad. That's right. That's what she kind of told me from a medical perspective. Like, this one's not that bad. And so that was another thing that kind of made me feel like a brat. Like, why am I complaining, right? There's people that, right, their kids do end up with cancers or, you know, just things that are so much heavier and so much worse. And so I think sometime during that pregnancy, I kind of, like, snap out of it. All right, now let's get out of the misery hole and, like, let's just focus on having a healthy pregnancy, delivering these babies. And, like, at that point, we'll just figure out what happens next kind of thing.
How old are they now?
So they just turned 4.
How did that happen?
May. I don't know. I there's a saying that says, like, the days are long, but the years are short. And it's 1,000% true because every day I feel like there's not enough hours. Every day I feel like I'm losing my mind, but I blinked and they turned 4. So it's insane. Like, time.
I mean, we'd be remiss to say that Eden was born with Down syndrome, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you are okay.
I am okay. And she is okay. You know, the twins were born at 30, just before 37 weeks, which is considered a full pregnancy, a full term pregnancy with multiples, right? And surprisingly enough, that girl didn't go to the NICU. Her brother did. Right? Her typical brother had premature lungs. He ended up in the NICU. She was checked out at birth. And between the neonatologists that were in the operating room, they were conflicted about whether or not she had Down syndrome. One thought she did. She doesn't have a lot of the physical markers that come with it. Visibly in her face, you can look at her and assume that she has it. But a lot of the other physical markers with the hand and feet, she didn't have. So they were kind of going back and forth. I think she has it. I don't think she has it, you know, blah, blah, blah. So again, we had to wait for the genetic marker test to come back. It came back positive. But at birth, I knew, right? Ryan was in the operating room. They took the twins out from C-section. He was going back and forth and he came over to me and he said, babe, I think she has it. I think she has it. She looks like she has it. And, you know, I'm laying on the operating table getting stitched up. And I just, in that moment, it was like something snapped in my mind and it was like, Ryan, it's okay. We kind of figured she would, right? Now we know she does. And, like, she'll be okay. We'll be okay. It was kind of like, I just kind of, like, woke up and, like, okay, if she has it, fine.
Let's go.
You know, they checked her out, her heart. She had, like, 2 small murmurs, and which is typical for any baby, regardless, typical or not, diagnosis or not, can have a heart murmur. She had them. The cardiologist checked her out 6 months later. They had completely closed. And with Down syndrome, you're either born with a heart condition. It's not something you can develop. So you're either born with it or not. So, like, that was an answered prayer because that was something I was worried about. Like, is she going to need heart surgery following birth? Like, no, her heart murmur is completely closed up. She was completely fine with that. You know, so it's like everything was just kind of like a learning curve with her. And I was very adamant about reminding myself, like, she's okay. She's going to do the same things that her brother and sister are going to do. It might take her longer. She might need extra help. She is going to be fine. And even now at 4 years old, I'm still telling myself the same things, right? Because it's really easy to compare her to her brother, especially her twin brother. I would say most of the time, I don't feel like I have twins, right? Because she is visibly smaller than him. She's delayed in a lot of the things that he's doing at 4 years old, right? She's not there yet. So a lot of the times I don't feel like I have twins. I feel like I have 3 kids at 3 different ages. She's still very much like a baby in a sense, right? She's got a couple handful of words, but she's not speaking, you know, fully. She's not speaking in sentences, right? So, you know, from the time she was 3 months till present, you know, she's been in physical therapy, speech therapy, occupational therapy. And I've seen her grow in so many different facets. And not to say that you take those milestones for granted with a typical child, but the appreciation I have when she reaches a milestone is so much deeper and so much sweeter because, like, I've seen her work hard for it. You know, like, she's got low muscle tone. That's very common with Down syndrome. They have hypotonia. So she's very floppy, right? As a baby, she was super floppy. You'd sit her up and she'd like tip over and, you know, starting to walk. She was just like all over the place. But she took her first stride of steps at Disney behind the castle, special, which was very special for me. But what a milestone. Like, I was in tears. Like, man, I've seen her work so hard in physical therapy and now she's walking, right? And it was late. She didn't start doing that until she was 2. She turned 3 and that's when she kind of really started picking up the concept of running. So everything's been delayed, but it's like, I see how hard she works to do things. And I'm like, when she gets it, I'm like, ah, you know, it's just, it's such a big celebration, you know, for her.
What do you think that Eden has taught you about yourself?
Oh, God. You're going to make me emotional. I mean,
because I see it, but I want to know if you can kind of verbalize what she's taught you about yourself.
Without choking on my tears. I mean, first and foremost, unconditional love, right? You have this idea in your head that, like, am I going to love her the same way that I love her typical siblings, right? Because the typical siblings, everything just comes like very easy and natural. I didn't have to like do anything special or extra for them. Oh, but man, like, I can't imagine my life without that little girl. She has taught me perseverance. Like, she is a spitfire and she totally has my attitude. She totally has my sass to the millionth degree, but she's not a pushover, right? She is not easily picked on, which I admire that in her, right? She doesn't let her siblings push her around. She has a very strong-willed personality. She doesn't take no for an answer, right? So even in her milestones of like walking or learning to feed herself, like, she's very adamant about not letting someone help her do it. Even in her not talking, she is communicating that, like, you will not help me. I'm going to do it myself. And so she's just taught me like how to just be strong. Like, sometimes it's like I can wallow in my own self-pity about what I'm not doing or what I'm not getting or whatever. And I look at her and I'm like, shut up. Like, she's joyful. If I can say what she's brought into my life is, I mean, the girl exudes joy, right? She's never in a bad mood unless she's like hungry or tired, which quite frankly, as an adult woman, I'm also the same way, right? Like, if I'm hungry or tired, I'm not in a good mood either. But she's so joyful and she makes everyone around her laugh and smile and just always has the biggest smile on her face. So like, she really has just brought me out of a funk sometimes where my natural inclination, it's like, I can sometimes be like an Eeyore, right? Feel like there's like a cloud hanging over my head and kind of look at things in a negative light. But then it's like, I look at her and I'm just like, ugh, snap out of it. Get out of the funk, Erica. Like, look at her, right? And just how much, I think she was perfectly created the way she is. You know, like, Brooklyn as a 7-year-old has asked me, like, Mom, why does Eden have Down syndrome? Why don't I have Down syndrome? Or why doesn't Camden? I don't know. That's exactly how God created her. That's exactly how she was meant to be. And she's perfect the way she is, right? I don't really look at her so much on a day-to-day basis as a child with a diagnosis. I have those reminders, right? She has more medical appointments than her siblings, right? She's not in a typical preschool with Camden right now. She's in one that allows her to have her therapies done, you know, while she's in school. She doesn't talk. She's not potty trained yet. So there's those physical reminders that I know she's not typical, but when I look at her, I'm just like, I don't look at her any different than the other ones. Like, she's my child, right? And she's taught me a lot. I mean, patience, right?
And damn, your dad was right.
Yeah, he was. He's always right. He's always right.
I'm curious, as a fellow kind of planner and person that needs to get the check marks and those kind of things, has Eden taught you to slow down and kind of plan less, or are you still kind of?
I would say she's taught me to have a better balance. I don't know if I could ever let go of the planning because I think my brain is just wired that way, right?
Yeah,
it's like if it's not on my calendar, it doesn't exist.
Because her mile markers are different, right? And so I feel like if it were me, that maybe I would be like, okay, I can calm down if certain things are not met on a regular basis, even if it means like cooking dinner or, you know, whatever it may be.
Yes. Yes. So a great example would be, you know, when you take your kids to the pediatrician, right? And you've got to fill out the form at their, you know, it's their annual checkup. And, oh, does your child do this? Does your child do this? I'd be filling out Camden's. Yes, 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 yes. And then I get to Eden's and I'm like, yes, no, no. You know, and so it's very easy to look at them and be like, well, she's two now. She should be talking, or she should be running and climbing things, but she's not. And so, yeah, in that aspect for sure, I'm just like, she'll get it when she gets it. That's, I say that a lot in the house. She'll get it when she gets it. And it doesn't matter that she learned to walk when she was two and Camden learned to walk when he was, you know, one. It doesn't matter that he was speaking a mouthful at two and she was just saying like, mama, you know, like she's going at her own pace, right? And her pediatrician and a lot of her specialists have always been so reassuring in the same message of like, Eden is going to do everything that she needs to do, right? Eden's going to do the same things as Camden. She's going to grow and she's going to learn new things, but she's going to do it at her own pace and at her own time. And she might need extra assistance to do it, but she will do it. And so they just kept on reminding me of that and just kind of filling my cup in that sense of like, she's okay. Like, because I think as a parent, it's naturally, like, it's normal to have concerns and to worry. And, you know, it's not to say I don't still have thoughts. I do still have thoughts. Like, is she always going to live with us? Is she ever going to be able to be independent? You know, things like that. But I have seen, because I've dug into like learning more about Down syndrome and looking at what I've found online and stuff like that. Like, yeah, there's plenty of people with Down syndrome that live independently and they find themselves, you know, in romantic relationships and have families and can drive a car and get a job. And there's one from Puerto Rico who became like a runway model. And I'm like, yes, my girl can do that. Like, you know, like, so I see all these things and I'm encouraged because I think it's very easy to just wallow in the what ifs or the assuming all the things that she can't do. And now it's like really just trying to shifting my mindset to like, she can do whatever she wants to do.
Yeah. Part of it is like, I mean, honestly, growing up, there was like one person with Down syndrome that was like famous, right, on TV. And so we didn't know much. So now the more that we're seeing this, there was that A&E show, which I thought was pretty well done, showing grown adults with Down syndrome, you know, working and relationships and getting married. And so I think the more we see that they're just doing things on a different timetable. And they're fully, like you said, Eden's fully capable. It's just going to take her maybe a little longer to do certain things. Maybe she's going to do other things that Camden won't even imagine doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I've seen your journey and I love learning the little pieces. I do want you to remind yourself that you are human and everything that you've experienced, good, bad, ugly, inside, is okay. So don't try to let go of that guilt. I know it's hard to do, but I like to wrap up these episodes with a question that's like kind of hard to answer and not really answerable anyway, but it's fun to ask. But if you, like this version of you in 2022, could talk to the Erica driving home from the day that you got the call that you had the option to test to make sure it was Down syndrome or not, and you were just really in that deep guilt of sadness, mm-hmm. what could you say to her? Or is there anything you could say to her to help?
I mean, I think looking back, I would have allowed myself or given myself the permission to feel those feelings, right? Because I felt them, but then I quickly like shut them in and shamed. Yes, and shame. Yeah, I felt bad that I felt that way. And I felt bad that I felt that way towards my child. I felt bad that I automatically assumed she would be less than, right? Mm. And looking back at that, like, I think those were normal feelings. Like you said, like those are normal human feelings, right? We're not always at a high and not everything is always positive and exactly how we planned it to be. But I had a lot of internal guilt and shame that even when I shared it with those around me who loved me and supported me and cared for me and cared for my babies, I felt bad really, really expressing how deeply I was feeling because I knew that they'd be like, what? Like, Erica, you know, and
people are so scared of other people feeling bad.
Yeah.
I think we need
and
to
I know
get...
like their responses were, again, in a supportive, encouraging manner.
Correct.
But I don't know that they realized like it was only making me feel a little bit worse about myself. Because I was already feeling that internal guilt. Like I knew what I was thinking was like not great, right? And I knew that she was going to be like, her having a diagnosis or not wouldn't have changed my love for her, right? It didn't change her being worthy of living. It didn't change the value of her life, right? She is a perfect creation. And I totally believe like she's a perfect creation in God's image. And he knew that she was going to have Down syndrome and he knew that I was going to be her mom. And so I know that none of that was going to change, but it was still something that I struggled to really just accept in that moment. So I think I would just look back and tell her like, it's okay to feel what you're feeling. Like it's normal to feel this way, but like it will be okay.
Yeah.
She's perfect.
I think it's a common through line in a lot of these conversations is this like self-awareness or self-acceptance of how we are at whatever moment it is. And I don't know where it came from in our generation. I hope it's going away. There's like a shame in feeling not great. Right. And that's just part of living to have these ups and downs, right? You can't be all the way up here because, you know, there's an opposite, right?
Yeah, I think it's the expectations we put on ourselves.
Yeah.
Right? I automatically assumed I was not meant to be a special needs mom. I was like, I can't do that. I've seen other people do it and they rock it. I don't think I'll rock it. I don't know anything about being a special needs parent. I don't know if I'll be able to care for her the way that I should. And so that was another part of it was just like, what? I'm not worthy of being a special needs mom.
And now people are looking at you in the same
maybe.
Way.
I mean, I hope so.
They are.
I hope. 100%. I try to be the best mom I can for all my kids, but her especially, I'm like, no one could care for her the way I care for her. No one could love her the way I love for her. Same with my other children, but I know that I'm doing the best I can for her. And so now it's like trying to give myself a little pep talk every day,
Yeah. Right? No, you're doing great things. And I haven't seen you in person in a while, but thanks to social media, we're able to kind of keep up with each other, and, you know, text messages here and there don't hurt, but I'm super proud of what you're doing. I'm also really happy that in this recording, you were honest. And I think that's what's going to help people out the most is not, you know, people have special needs children all the time, right? And they do it, and they do it well in a lot of cases. But the fact that you going through this journey and your honesty here, I really appreciate. So thank you for being a part of the Life Shift podcast. And I'm just honored to be your friend.
Oh, likewise. I'm super proud of you, and I'm super proud to be your friend after all these years.
It's so long. All right, my friends, we will be back next week with a new episode of the Life Shift podcast, and we'll see you then. I'm Matt Gilhooly, and this is The Life Shift, candid conversations about the pivotal moments that change lives forever. Please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. For more information about how you can support The Life Shift podcast, please visit www.thelifeshiftpodcast.com. See you next time.